Oh, snaps!
The world is finally waking up to the crap that's baked into and sprayed on kibble dog food. No longer can commercial pet food manufacturers fool us with pretty pictures and false promises. This is the raw dog food truth. The view and opinions expressed on this podcast are not intended to replace medical advice. Before starting any raw diet, do research, ask lots of questions, and consult your vet.
Well, good morning, pet parents. Happy Friday to you. I'm Dee Dee Mercer Moffitt, the CEO of Raw Dog Food and Company, where your pet's health is our business and we're friends. Don't let friends feed kibble. Well, you know what our fantastic Friday is? That is our day with Dr. Judy Jasik. How are you today, Dr. Jasik?
I am doing awesome. I'm ready to get out and change the world.
Well, I think you are changing the world. Absolutely. You're changing veterinarians' minds. You're changing pet parents' minds because you're helping them see toxins in, bad nutrition in, does not make a happy, healthy dog. Right?
Right. It's so simple. Like, I look at that. It's like health to me is fundamentally so simple. We just need to give the body the right tools to keep it healthy. Like we talk about nutrition, species appropriate, all that. And you stop poisoning it. Voila, you got health. Like it's really simple. I don't know why, you know, how am I even staying in business? Cause it should be that easy. You know, just stop poisoning your pet, feed them a good diet. I shouldn't ever see anybody.
Right.
That's not the case.
No, it is not the case. You know what? I heard this great, great, quote by Saint Augustine. Mm-hmm. And I think this fits what you and I do. And it says, the truth is like a lion. You don't have to defend it. You just let it loose and it will defend itself.
Ooh, that's good. I like that.
I love that because it's the same way in raw dog food. Okay. You don't have to defend it because you just let it loose and people see the truth. It's not like you have to go out there and coerce people to talk about its great effects. I mean, it's just, you just let it loose and it just goes.
Right. You know, I have a great example of that. I saw a client, I don't know, yesterday or the day before and had this old, I mean, I think the dog was almost 16, old poodle cross, really couldn't see very well. Couldn't hear very well. But this dog comes in, it's got some big fatty lumps. This dog, so happy. It just comes in. It's looking for treats. You know, just an old dog, but it's just kind of wandering around and, you know, just asking her how the dog's doing. And she said, you know, he's old, but he's happy. And, but she said that raw food, she said that was life-changing. She said he wouldn't even probably be here if I wasn't feeding him raw. And she said, I'll never feed anything else. Never feed anything else. Because why? Because just like what she said, the truth came out. She saw her 16-year-old dog. And yeah, the dog doesn't see so well, doesn't hear so well, but man, he was a happy dog. He comes in, he's looking for treats, he's wagging his tail, he's, you know, enjoying his rubs. This was not a debilitated 16-year-old dog. You know, he was doing great. And he, you know, it's some old age stuff, but other than that, he checked out great. And she completely credited the raw feeding. She said it numerous times. 3, 4, 5 times during our visit. She says, I just can't believe it. She says, I just couldn't imagine feeding anything else. So there you go. The truth speaks.
So I wanted to ask you, we did have a question come up from Paige, and Paige had a little English bulldog that had a little problem, Dr. Jasik. Evidently, somebody was on a treadmill and that treadmill was going and that dog decided to grab the belt with her face.
Oh,
got a tooth caught in the belt. Ouch. She had to have surgery. This dog had to get that tooth removed because she was grabbing a belt.
Yeah. Oh, ouch. Makes my mouth hurt just thinking about it.
It does hurt. But I could see it happening, right? I could see these little guys that were like, let me get that belt. Mm-hmm. But here was Paige's question. So she started off, she said, because of our podcast, 2 years ago, she got her dog off of Apoquil. All right. And started feeding a raw diet. And the blood work has been amazing. But this particular blood work, which I didn't think was any big deal, but she wanted to know about it, came back. Everything was normal. Everything was great, except the retic. Now, it's R-E-T-I-C. And in the blood work, there's three different categories for that. Everything was good, except this particular one category was low. 7.6 was the number, and the reference interval numbers, or I guess the range, is 10 to 11. So Paige's question was this: does this have anything to do with raw feeding? To which I said, Paige, come on. No, I just think that people don't know what a lot of these blood counts mean. And I think that she was wondering if this meant, Dr. Jasek, that her dog was anemic, and could this anemia be related to raw feeding? But I'd like to give Paige a little bit better understanding of what retic is in this particular blood work, and what would you attribute this low number to? Was it food? Was it, what is it?
Well, first of all, the retic, which is short for reticulocytes, which are immature red blood cells. So the bone marrow manufactures blood cells, come from the bone marrow. And the reticulocytes are the immature red blood cells that come out. And that's just one of the things they measure. But that is not a measure of anemia. Matter of fact, if a dog is anemic, this value will be high, because the body is making more red blood cells to make up for the anemia. Now, to look for anemia, you look at the HCT, which is the hematocrit, which is the percentage of red blood cells. So when we run blood, we put the blood in a tube, we let it clot, and then we spin it down. And it's like different. So when you separate out like the serum from the red blood cells, this is a measure of the percentage of the blood that is red blood cells. Now, when this is measured, it's measured on blood that is not clotted. But I use that reference just to say that there's a difference between the red blood cell and white blood cell fraction of the blood and the serum. All the chemistry, the stuff we look for, liver function, kidney function, those are all run on the serum. The hematocrit, which in this dog is 54%, that's the percentage of red blood cells. That's in the high normal range. So if I were to look at this, I would say this dog has a good, healthy amount of red blood cells. The body doesn't need to be making any more. So it isn't wasting its energy making new red blood cells, because it's already got plenty. The dog's maintaining fine, probably because it is on a raw diet and it doesn't need any more. So I think interpreting lab results, first of all, you know, these are based on averages. And we were talking about this before we started the show today, that a lot of tests that are run are based on averages. Well, who decides what's normal in the dog population? You know, the lab does, but how do you know that that's appropriate, that those quote unquote normals are appropriate for every individual? Well, you don't, and you have to look at the circumstance and all of the lab work. And sometimes just because things are outside of the normal range, it doesn't mean that that's a problem. It could just be the body doesn't need the reticulocytes, so it's not making them. It's like, you know, sometimes like white blood cells, and the white blood cells on this dog are normal. Sometimes we'll see a slightly low white blood cell count. Well, if the dog is normal, they're not getting sick. Now, if you have very low white blood cell count, we have a compromised immune system, that can be a problem, but those dogs are sickly. If you have a very, very healthy dog and their white blood count, white blood cell count's a little low, well, it could just be they're not fighting anything. So the body isn't making these cells because it doesn't need them. And you also have, you know, you have to look at all the results together. So this low reticulocyte with a high hematocrit, you know, high normal hematocrit, that really doesn't concern me at all. If we had a low reticulocyte and a low hematocrit, that would be a big problem, because that means the dog's anemic and the body isn't responding to it. And you could have a big problem there, because the body is not able to kick out new red blood cells. So that would be a problem. So you can't just single out these values. You have to look at all the values together, because they all, you know, interact together in the body.
Yeah. And one thing that there is a site that I've thought about putting up on our website that kind of goes through all of these different ALTs, you know, SST, all the different, you know, PCV, what do they all mean? Because in this particular report, they say, you know, this one could mean this, but when you combine it with the other and you have to look at this other number, it means something totally different. So I think it is, you know, good for people to understand that it's not always what it seems. And what I found interesting was on the reticulocytes. Is that how you say it? You know, I can't say these words.
Reticulocytes. Yeah.
Reticulocytes.
You can just say retic.
Yeah. Retic. On the retic, it said, if you just looked at that number and the dog was anemic, it would be high and not low, which I found was interesting. It's counterintuitive to me. So it doesn't have anything to do with the food, Dr. Jacek?
I would say no. I would say this is actually a blood panel I would look at and say, this dog is doing really, really well on a raw diet. That'd be my interpretation.
Does it have anything to do with the fact that they just had surgery?
Well, sure, because that can affect all kinds of things in the body. You know, and the other thing to keep in mind about blood work, too, is it's a snapshot. So say this dog had some slightly elevated liver enzymes, which it does not. But a lot of times after dogs have had surgery, because their body's metabolizing a lot of the drugs and the liver is working really hard, I would say it would be common to maybe see a little bump in the liver enzymes. Now, would I panic about that or think this dog has liver disease? I'd say, no, the dog's probably processing the drugs it just had from surgery. The fact that this dog does not means that its body is functioning really, really well. It's healthy liver, healthy kidneys. Even though it's been through surgery, its body has handled all that beautifully. And probably that has a lot to do with the fact that it is on, you know, a raw diet. And this low reticulocyte count, could the bone marrow be just a little suppressed from all the drugs? Possible. And how would we know the answer to that? You recheck the CBC in 4 to 6 weeks. That's what I do. You know, sometimes I pick up these, you know, something it seems a little off. And again, I'm not really concerned about this lab work, but if a person wanted to know, well, is this transient? Is this due to surgery? You recheck it. The dog's healthy. It's doing fine. There's no big medical concern. Just run another CBC in 4 to 6 weeks and see what changes. And I bet anything, this would probably correct.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, since we're talking about the mouth, let's talk about dogs' gum disease, because a lot of people, they want to know how to keep their dog's teeth clean. And so they're they talk about bones. All right. We had a customer that said, I would like a recommendation on bone. However, I'm fearful of bones because, and I'm paraphrasing, okay. I'm fearful of bones because I had a dog that cracked a tooth a couple of years ago. And, you know, that's expensive, right? And it also is painful to the dogs. There is a risk to any type of a bone that can crack a dog's teeth. I mean, they can. They absolutely can. So can a stick. So can a rock. So can two dogs playing very aggressively together and they come up and they bump teeth, right? So you have to kind of decide what you want to do, right? I can't make a recommendation that is totally risk-free. Can't make it, because there is risk in everything. And I heard this other quote that I love, and it says, if there is risk, there must be choice. There's risk in anything, there must be choice. So you have a choice. All right. But if you've ever watched any of Dr. Longsdale's videos on the guy who's written the book, Give a Dog a Bone. I mean, he'll take these dogs, Dr. Jasek, with these just god-awful black, corroded, nasty teeth and put them on a raw, meaty bone diet. Now, and their teeth, you know, will look amazing. They won't have bad breath. But this is a raw, meaty bone diet. So they're pulling the meat off. They're holding them with their back teeth. And they're getting a lot of a scrub with those raw, meaty bones. But you guys, there's no way in all of the bone categories that we have for me to say this one is going to be the perfect bone for your dog. If you look at hardness, bison's going to be your hardest. Then beef is going to come. We're going to go down the scale. So bison's the hardest. Then we come in with the beef bones, and then we're going to come in with the poultry bones. I just wanted to kind of throw that out there, but you've got some great things that you do for teeth. And I saw this, you have a toothpaste that you make up for dogs and you also have ozonated. See, it's where you put the emphasis on any word.
Got to put the emphasis on the right syllable, right?
So tell us a little bit. I want to hear about your toothpaste for dogs. What do you suggest?
Yeah. So first of all, getting in there like mechanically and brushing the teeth. And I get this question a lot too. Like, what do I do for my dog's teeth? Well, do you brush them? No. Well, what do you do for your teeth? Like, you brush them, right? So brushing dog's teeth is good. Anything that dogs, you know, chew on can help. Anything that's abrasive. I mean, raw food is naturally abrasive, so it does help. It's way better than eating, you know, of course, a kibble that just crumbles and sticks to the gum line and creates all kinds of plaque that builds into tartar. So anything the dog can chew on will help. It's also true that the harder the bone, they can crack their teeth. Tennis balls will wear dogs' teeth down to nothing. That coating on tennis balls, I can almost tell now. I'll look at a dog and it's like, it's not like one or two teeth, like might've been traumatized. It's like, they're all just worn down. And I'll ask, did dog chew on tennis balls? And usually it's yes. Cause it's just like taking a grinder to them. What we recommend for brushing. So most pet toothpaste, I have yet to find one that I really like because they have a lot of garbage in them. They have colors. So many of them have artificial sweeteners and just crap in them that is not good for your dog. Because remember, if you're brushing your dog's teeth, they're probably swallowing some of that toothpaste. They're not just spitting it all out like we do. And so you want to be really careful that they're not ingesting some, you know, chemicals or something that might not be good for them. But, you know, one of the therapies we do is ozone therapy, and we have an ozonated olive oil. So ozone, when ozone is made in the generator, it doesn't last in the environment, dissipates very quickly. So therapeutically, we generate it on site. You need to use it in about 30 minutes or it'll just breaks back down into oxygen. But you can infuse it into olive oil and it will stay in the olive oil, and you can use ozonated olive oil. It's actually a good wound treatment because ozone's a natural disinfectant. It's a, you know, antifungal, anti-yeast. It's really good for, I've had people use it on their skin for different, you know, acne, rashes, things like that. But what we do for toothpaste is we take that because ozone's great anti-inflammatory, as I said, antibacterial, antifungal, but we mix it with some coconut oil, which makes it taste good. Most dogs really like the taste of coconut oil because it's safe or it's sweet, safe, sweet. And they tend to like that. And it's also an antibacterial, antifungal, great anti-inflammatory. So the combination of the two, I think works really well for a toothpaste. So just put a little of that on the brush. And even if your dog like hates to have that toothbrush in its mouth, if you could just rub this on the gums to reduce inflammation, anybody with cats, this is great for cats that really fight having their teeth brushed. If you can just get some of this in their mouth on their gums, it's going to help. Brushing, I think, is better, but even just getting this, this oil in there, it can really help. And there's no, you know, no preservatives, no chemicals, no, nothing dangerous, nothing that you don't want your dog to have.
What kind of toothpaste do you use? Can I ask?
I use one from, I think the company is Redmond, and it's the most minimal ingredient. It's called like earth paste. It's only got like a couple of ingredients. It's got like clay and something else that's maybe some baking soda that's abrasive and a little spearmint.
We do the same thing. We don't use, you know, we use the toothpaste that has minimal stuff in it. So a lot of dentists believe in this fluoride in toothpaste. What would you say about that? I don't like fluoride in toothpaste. I don't want fluoride in anything personally.
Fluoride, one of the things that fluoride does is it competes with iodine in your thyroid gland. And so it can actually create thyroid problems because it like replaces the iodine's important for normal thyroid function, and the fluoride will compete with that and replace it. And so it can have really devastating effects on the thyroid gland. And it's toxic. It's toxic in the body. There's really no need for it. I think that's been well disproven that, you know, fluoride doesn't really do what they say it's supposed to do. Probably just creates more dental disease and then makes more money for the medical complex.
Yeah. Yeah. I did want to bring to your attention, listeners out there, here is an alternative to a bone. The beef trachea strips that we have. Okay. Now I will say this, that they are definitely going to consume these. Okay. But we have the beef trachea whole. They're whole. If you've ever tried to take a beef trachea, Dr. Jasek, and cut it in half, it's hard. You're not going to, mm-hmm. I have tried to
do that because having little dogs, I'm out in the garage looking for what tools or implements. I've smashed them with hammers. I've done all kinds of things. They are hard. You think, oh, it's just the soft cartilage stuff. No. They're pretty tough.
Yep. They are tough. But now we have the strips, and they're the 5 to 6 inch strips, and they're cut in half. So these are much easier, especially for these little dogs. Mm-hmm. And this is something that you can definitely use if you want a safe product for their teeth. So they're the beef trachea strips. Also, the bull penises, which are called bully sticks, you could use those as well. But I do like these trachea pieces. So we have them in the whole form, or we have them in the 5 to 6 inch. So that is another great, great way to keep your dog's teeth clean. But the best way is don't feed them frigging kibble.
Right.
CKS. I mean, I remember years ago when we were on the TV station and they just totally lamb blasted us and the fake media, where they condescend to doing this big day of talking about raw dog food. And then they just brought in a traditional vet that said, oh, no, you know, don't feed that raw. Oh, and the guy on TV that they picked actually said, if you want to keep your dog's teeth clean, feed them kibble. It'll clean their teeth. I was just like, What kind of fraud did they find? You know?
Well, and that's the puppy. I still have people that come in and say that, well, if I don't feed kibble, how am I going to keep my dog's teeth clean? Because that has been the marketing thing forever. Do you remember the old Milk-Bone commercials where they'd have the little dog, the dog, usually I think it was like a collie dog, and they'd have like the little sparkling star on the teeth because those Milk-Bones clean the teeth. It's like eating a freaking cookie and expecting it to clean your teeth. Same with kibble. And that's what I say. Like if you, like how clean do your teeth feel after you eat a cookie or a pretzel and you get all those dried carbs packed in around the gum line? Like that's what's happening to your dog's teeth. Kibble makes their teeth so much dirtier. And that's just, it's just all marketing propaganda. And it's, you know, it's just amazing how these ways of thinking permeate our culture and like the veterinary profession, and people just don't ever believe anything different. That's just what they've always heard. So must be true. They never ask, you know, why, or maybe there's something better, you know, that's a good thing. There's people like us that ask those questions because a lot of people don't.
Yeah. and then we are vilified. But I'm telling you that, again, it's all about how people are trained, or Dr. Jasek, what your true, how do I want to say this? What your true agenda is for your business, right? Mm-hmm. So are you in the business of healthcare, or are you in the business of profits, right? And I was reading this article from this person, and it says, I'm 28 years old. I spent the past 4 years at an Ivy League medical school, and I couldn't have been more excited to be a doctor when I first arrived on campus. But then slowly, the truth became more and more apparent to me. I refused to swallow the dogma just because that was what was being taught in class, and always went to primary research to see if what they were selling me was truly accurate. And what I found out was worse than I could have ever imagined. It would take multiple textbooks to fully articulate my feelings about the profession, but I'll try to summarize as best I can below in the horrors of the healthcare in the US. Now, it goes through a bunch of information, in vaccines and all these different things. But here's one of the points that he made that I thought really is relevant to what we always talk about. And he says, the healthcare industry is perfectly designed to keep you a customer for life. How many times have we said that?
Oh, Dr. yeah, absolutely.
He said, at one of the best medical schools in the country, we not only received next to no education about nutrition or lifestyle in our entire curriculum, but I'm here to tell you that the biggest killers, the biggest money makers in the U.S. are 90% due to nutrition and are 100% reversible. And he was talking about this on the human side, but he said, look, obesity, type 2 diabetes, heart disease, high blood pressure, arthritis, high cholesterol, he said, is due to what? He said, it's due to what you eat. Mm-hmm. Right? He even goes on to say the heart healthy oils that are promoted by the AHA, the American Heart Association, in the supermarket are highly inflammatory oils that cause heart disease. And he says the same goes for the ADA, the sugar recommendations. And in your industry, he says many cancers should also be included in the preventable and reversible category. He said, but if you say that as a doctor or a health professional, you will be ostracized.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's this, we're starting to hear this more and more. I've been hearing it more and more in some of the people I listen to, but the whole terrain theory versus germ theory. And now it's coming out primarily on the human side, but I think it's very applicable to pets. And basically what it says is that, you know, conventional medicine focuses on the germ or whether, you know, like it's a bacteria or a virus, or there's something that we have to attack and we have to kill. Well, how do they make money? They sell things that kill things. It's drugs or it's vaccines, because we gotta get, you know, we gotta protect, you know, your body against this bug. Where if we focus on the terrain, which is the health of the body, and exactly what you're saying, starting with nutrition and stop poisoning it. If we just gave the body the right tools to heal and stop poisoning it, we go a real, real long way towards having healthy bodies. And it's the same for our pets. And it really is that simple. Just our medical systems have gone so far to convince us that that's not the case, that we cannot be healthy on our own and we cannot have healthy pets on our own. Oh no, they have to go into the doctor and they have to get all these vaccines and they have to be on these prescription diets and they have to do all these expensive tests, because there's money in sickness. I find creating, you know, healthy pets to be a very good business model personally, but I think there's the profit driven entities that just want to make more and more and more money, the big big corporations, they see dollar signs in chronic illness because then the pets have to come in for more diagnostics and more treatments and more drugs. And then they have to get more drugs to treat the side effects from the drugs. And it becomes this vicious cycle. And then eventually the pets will get something really serious like cancer, and they'll kill them with those treatments, which literally is what happens. If we focus on the terrain and just keeping the body healthy, it's totally doable to be healthy. I feel like most of what I do is I try to undo the harm that's been done by the more conventional approach. And sometimes we can't. Sometimes I think the bodies are just so damaged that it's hard to get them back from that. But you know, good health is fundamentally very, very simple. And the profit-driven medical corporations have just convinced people that, you know, that if you're not taking a pill and you're not going to, you know, see your doctor several times a year for tests and this, that, and the other thing, that, you know, there's just no way you could be healthy on your own. Like, we're not smart enough to figure that out.
Yeah. I was thinking about this whole thing, about this whole COVID thing, right? And I thought, all this money that they were putting out there for stimulus money, if they would have put money out that said, we're going to create companies that put out good food, right? We're going to put out, you know, no sugar, no carbs, no preservatives. We're going to encourage you to go that direction. We're going to encourage you to drink the right kind of water. We're going to encourage you to not put smoke or alcohol or these type of things in your body. But you never heard that. I was just thinking about that the other day. Let's get your terrain in the best possible shape so that it can fight off whatever's coming your way. Right. And all of the things that we know today, you know, increase your vitamin D, go outside, sit in the sun, increase your vitamin C, get your quercetin, get your zinc. None of that was talked about. You know, if you really cared about health, it's not what people say. It is what they do. Watch their actions. This had nothing to do with helping our terrain be better. Yeah. As a matter of fact, they shut down everybody that talked about how to make your terrain stronger.
Yeah. Yeah. They got censored, kicked off of like many of the social media platforms. And it was, very early on, the link between vitamin D and COVID was well demonstrated, that if people just got their vitamin D levels up, that their chances of getting seriously ill from COVID was very slim. Like, the people that got really seriously ill, if they checked a vitamin D level, which a lot of doctors won't even do, that the people that got the most seriously ill were low in vitamin D and just on poor diets in general, probably. Why was obesity an increased risk? Because probably most people in that category are not eating a healthy diet. They're not eating a healthy, well-balanced diet to begin with. So they're not getting the proper nutrients and probably are borderline diabetics and because of their poor diet. So yeah, if they had just talked to people about that, they would have been, you know, so much healthier. But you know, the powers that be are not interested in health. And sadly, it's the same in the veterinary profession. We're a branch of that same complex, because it's all the same corporations. It's the same big pharmaceutical companies. And you want to talk vaccine mandates? I mean, vaccines are mandated in pets these days like crazy. It makes me nuts that people have a hard time getting in like to an emergency clinic without their pets being updated on vaccines, which has nothing to do with what the pets are going in for. And we should be vaccinating sick or injured pets, but vaccine mandates in pets is becoming a huge, huge problem. And I think it's hugely detrimental to our pets that they're requiring these. Either the pets get the vaccines and that is not good for their health, or people don't take them in. Like a lot of my clients, they're like, my pet gets sick or hurt. I don't know where to take it. There's no place I really feel good about you know, taking them. And that's really sad.
Yeah. I just did a short podcast earlier this week on what's really in your vaccines. And let's look at some of the common reactions and the severe reactions. And this was based on Ronald Schultz's work, right? Mm-hmm. And what I found fascinating, Dr. Jasek, was that there were so many of the same reactions in pets, myocarditis, seizures, all of these different types of things that we see and that we have seen in the people that have taken these other vaccines, the human vaccine, anaphylaxis, right? People passing out, right? Mm-hmm. As soon as they get their shots. And what's totally frightening is the cancer rate that you and I see in animals, not just due to crappy nutrition, which, my gosh, if you go out in the world, in the human world, there's a fast food restaurant on every corner.
Oh my gosh. And they all have lines. And no matter, you go to them, you can drive by McDonald's like 3 o'clock in the afternoon and there'll be like 10 cars there. Like it baffles me, but anyway.
Right. Right. And so you've got crappy food and then you're putting toxins in your body. And I was just like, this has just got to be a wake-up call. This has got to be a wake-up call all the way around, but certainly for your pets. And I was looking at this, where in the veterinary world, if we are actually going to have factual and true informed consent, you can't give it if you don't actually have data on a product, right? If you go in and you say, hey, what's the data sheet say, right, on this? And if they don't have it, well, how, and they don't know what's in the product, whether that's on the human side or the vet side, you can't get informed consent. And if you can't get informed consent, then you cannot really have the ability to make a good choice.
Who's putting the quote unquote science out there? And in the vaccine industry, I can guarantee you it's the pharmaceutical companies making the vaccines. Matter of fact, I know in Colorado, if you dig in and you read the actual rules around the rabies vaccine, which, you know, we're all told, oh, it's required by law and all this stuff. There's no actual law. It just simply says, we recommend that you follow the recommendations of the vaccine industry or the vaccine manufacturer. I think they say manufacturer, something like that. That's all they say. There's been no independent anything that shows that dogs need a rabies vaccine every so many years. They don't look into what's the actual disease risk. Here in Colorado, rabies is almost non-existent. Like a non-issue. Like it's so rare that a pet would get rabies in Colorado that probably the risk of the vaccine side effects are way worse than the risk of getting the actual rabies disease. And so you have to like think about all this. And it, you know, people just get, it seems like on autopilot, like they've always heard, well, how do you keep your pet healthy? Well, you take them into the vet every year and get them their shots. Like that's the paradigm. Is that true? Or has that just been the propaganda that's been promoted for years and years and years, and everybody just blindly believes it and nobody questions? What happened to questioning or debating or saying, why is this important for my pet? Why is this good for my pet? Is this actually helping my pet? What's actually in the stuff? Like you said, ask for the package inserts. You know, what's actually in here? And what are the risks and what are the benefits? I bet you 99% of the time, there's no informed consent whatsoever in veterinary medicine when it comes to vaccines and medications. They're not going, I bet you most vets have never read a package insert. Because if they did, it would scare the bejesus out of them. Because I have. And even on, you know, some more common drugs, I mean, the list of side effects is huge. So you have to really be discriminating. Okay, you know, maybe something would have therapeutic benefit for a pet, but we've got these risks, but then it's a risk benefit analysis. Maybe this would be, you know, worthwhile to use in the short term, help stabilize the pet, and then we get them off of it, but we want to be watching for these certain side effects and we need to be letting people know these are the potential side effects. You know, this is what what can happen. Like, you know, if a cancer patient goes in and gets chemo, their dog gets diarrhea, and they'll come back to me and say, do you think it's the raw diet? I'm like, let's see. Do I think it's the raw diet? What about the chemotherapy your dog? But they were told, you know, they were told that that the dogs don't get sick from chemo. That's kind of the word out there in the oncology world, veterinary oncology. People get sick from chemo. Dogs don't get sick from chemo. I have seen so many dogs. I've seen dogs end up in the hospital seriously ill from chemo. But it's like, why is it always the food? Why is it always the raw food? You're poisoning your dog with these harsh chemicals, but it's the food? Like, you know, I think we really need to look at, why do we believe the things that we believe? Is there really true sound evidence for what we believe? And it, you know, is it really true? I mean, I ask myself that all the time in practice. Why am I doing what I'm doing? Is this justified? Is this true? Is A really causing B and then creating C, or are stuff just kind of happening at the same time, but they're not really linked? And I think that kind of critical thinking has really gone by the wayside in our whole civilization. I think people just don't think critically and analytically anymore. It's just, they just believe what they've been told, what everybody else is doing. Well, that's what my parents did with their pets growing up. When I was growing up, that's what they did. So I guess that's what I'll do. You know, people just don't think for themselves anymore. It's pretty sad.
We hope that you will take a stand for health freedom, because that's what we are all about here at Raw Dog Food and Company. Certainly what you do, Dr. Jasek, we're all about health. We're all about terrain theory, keeping that terrain clean and clear. Dr. Judy Jasek can work with you on keeping your pet's terrain as healthy as possible. Find her zooming around the country on Zoom. You can sign up for a consult at ahavet.com. Join us 5 days a week here at Raw Dog Food and Company on the Raw Dog Food Truth, because here at Raw Dog Food and Company, your pet's health is our business, and friends don't let friends feed kibble. We'll see you on Monday, everybody. Bye-bye.
Oh, snap.
Find out how you can start your dog on the road to health and longevity. Go to rawdogfoodandcompany.com, where friends don't let friends feed kibble, and where your pet's health is our business.
Just snap.